Just a couple of decades ago, concepts like autism and Asperger's syndrome were not widely known and were even less understood, I think. But thanks to people like our guest, there's much wider understanding and compassion for people living with conditions that can make social interactions and moving through the world a bit of a challenge sometimes. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. We're very happy to have Temple Grandin with us today. She presently works as a professor of animal science at Colorado State University, speaks around the world on both autism and handling of animals, particularly cattle. She's the author of many books, including The Way I See It, A Personal Look at Autism and Asperger's. And she's visiting Wisconsin this weekend for a couple of events. And Temple, great pleasure to talk with you again. Thank you so much.
It's good to be here.
You've been very open throughout your career talking about living with autism. And for people who don't know your story, maybe you could share a bit of that with us.
Well, I was brought up in the 50s. And when I was a little kid, I had no speech until age 4. I was very lucky to get into a really good early intervention program. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of working with these young kids for many, many hours every week. The worst thing you can let them do is sit in the corner if you've got a young 3-year-old that's not talking. Now, the thing about autism is it's a very big spectrum. And the spectrum has gotten even bigger since the diagnostic criteria have been changed. You know, used to be, to be autistic, you had to have speech delay plus autistic behaviors like repetitive behavior, fixated interests, rocking. Now they've taken the speech delay out, and they've also removed the Asperger's and kind of merged that in with the autism. So now you've got this big spectrum where you got somebody who's kind of geeky and nerdy and socially awkward who's out at Silicon Valley, and I've been to Silicon Valley. I've been to the tech companies. It's full of people with mild autism, most of them undiagnosed. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have somebody that's very seriously handicapped, to be nonverbal, will have to live in a supervised living situation. So you got Silicon Valley and Einstein, who had no language till age 3, merged in with people with many more severe handicaps. And you take the kids on the higher end of the spectrum, you know, in the 50s and 60s, those were just called geeks and nerds. And I went to college with a lot of kids that were that kind of kid, and they were my friends because they were the only ones that didn't tease me. You know, I can't emphasize enough to build on the kids' strengths. Some of these kids are really intelligent, you know, develop abilities in things like art or mathematics or music.
I think, you know, it's really interesting to me that you're coming to Wisconsin this weekend. You're giving 2 talks.
Yes.
One deals with autism, and the other deals with animal behavior, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's correct, yes. So I'm be talking to the veterinary students.
Which is, I think, wonderful and something that you've done pretty much your whole career.
Yeah.
We were talking with our previous guests about animal behavior, especially in the world of companion animals. It's different working with cattle, for example, from studying the behavior of dogs and cats.
Well, you've got different behaviors. One of the problems we got with dogs and cats now is they're living such a restricted life with all the leash laws that they're not learning proper social behavior. And we got more problems with anxiety with dogs being home alone and dogs that fight other dogs really bad because they never learned any social skills. When I was a child, all the dogs ran loose, and we just didn't have many. We didn't have any behavior problems other than puppies chewing up things, and also you did not have people when I was a child deliberately breeding vicious dogs. And unfortunately, you've got people doing that today.
Yeah.
That was not going on in the 60s either, or the 50s.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Oh yeah, there are some really bad people out there breeding some really bad dogs. You're deliberately selecting for aggressive traits. But that's wasn't going on before. But I've seen a lot of problems with, just home alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when my now the downside you had when the dogs ran loose is a lot of dogs were hit by cars.
Yeah.
But I think they actually had a better life in some cases. They had a whole doggy social world.
Well, you've certainly studied and know about dogs, but you've really done a lot of work with cattle. And
cattle's my big thing. And
yeah. How did you get interested in that, by the way?
Well, it all gets down to you got to get exposed to it.
Yeah.
You know, I had a chance to go out to my aunt's ranch. Also, when I was in high school, my boarding school I went to had a 12-cow dairy. We had horses. So I was exposed to that, and I got really interested in it. So this brings up a really important thing to get children interested in things. They can turn into careers, especially the kids that are kind of quirky and different. Now they have to have a label to get any educational service. And I'm getting concerned, especially on the kids on the higher end of the spectrum, getting held back by labels. Now our services today for the more severe kids, oh, way better. Back in the 50s, I was the kind of kid they just threw away in the garbage in an institution. That's what they used to do with me, and I was very lucky that's not where I went. But you take the kids that are just kind of quirky and different, well, to get them interested in things that can turn into good careers, well, they got to get exposed to things. Like in the HBO movie Temple Grandin, I got all interested in optical illusion rooms. Well, I was exposed to that in a science movie. You know, I always say, you've got to expose kids to interesting things to get them interested in interesting things that can turn into good jobs.
Yeah. How does autism, I know from interviewing in the past, Patricia McConnell and I interviewed you once.
Yes, that's right.
And your interest in cattle, for example, has autism really helped shape your work as an animal behaviorist?
Well, I'm an extreme visual thinker, and I think it has shaped it. Everything I think about is a picture. Like when I was talking about those dogs, I saw the dogs, different actual dogs I've seen in different places. I saw them. It's an animal is sensory-based, not word-based. And some of the very earliest work I did with cattle, I found that they'd be scared of the distractions, things like a reflection on a fence, a chain hanging down, a car parked next to a facility. You know, they notice details in their environment that people tend to not notice. Now, when I was young, I didn't know that other people didn't think in pictures. And I talk about, you know, how my thinking in pictures works in my book, The Autistic Brains, my new book that's just out. And I talk about the different kinds of thinking. You see, in autism, you tend to get uneven skills. The kid's good at one thing, terrible at something else. You got kids that are little mathematicians, terrible at reading. I was a visual thinker. Thinking pictures, terrible at algebra. And then you've got the word thinkers. They're good with words. And when you think in pictures, that's more like how an animal would think. They don't think in words. It's sensory-based.
Yeah.
You know, dogs are thinking in smells. I mean, think about what the dog's learning when he checks out the local tree. That little social trip to the coffee shop.
Temple Grandin, our guest today, professor of animal science at Colorado State University, author of many books, and we have a link to her site and to her books as well. And I hope you'll click on, take a look, because she's got some many good books out there. Cindy in Belleville has a comment. Hi,
okay.
Cindy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Mostly I wanted to give my thanks to Dr. Grandin for all the help she has given me from reading her books and from the work she's done. I'm a sheep farmer, and I've learned so much about how to handle my sheep, how to act around my sheep, how to use eye contact or lack of eye contact,
yep.
You know, how to move my body when I'm around the sheep. That helps me on an almost daily basis. I wanted to give one quick example. I was moving my sheep just a couple days ago to give them their daily ration of corn, and normally they just stream right past me, and this particular day, suddenly the stream stopped. And I turned around, and the sheep was standing there staring at me with her head tilted over to the side, you know, and I couldn't figure out what had stopped the stream. And in that case, there was something different that had caused the whole thing to stop. And this happens sometimes, and then using the examples you've given me, I go back and try to figure out what it was that happened that day. And
did you figure it out?
I'd never figured it out that particular day. There was something different about me, I think, that day.
Well, it might have just been. It could be any little thing. They pick up on little sensory details. It could have been a sound. It might not have been something visual. It might have been some kind of a sound they were hearing.
Yes. Another observation I've had is that they seem to adapt much more quickly to changes in me than to changes in objects. and perhaps that's my voice.
Well, they know that you're safe.
Yes.
Now, let's say there's a great big shadow that goes across an alley that they walk over every day. Well, they're going to go over that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Let's say you bought a new animal and it comes in into the flock for the first time. That new animal's likely to stop at it unless it's just following. Sheep are great followers.
Yes.
And they, if that new animal is by itself, it's going to stop at that shadow, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they get used to certain things being in the environment.
Yeah.
But when
yeah.
you're working in places, I've done a lot of work in the meat plants, and boy, you have a distraction there. They're not going to go by it. You know, I've fixed meat plants and made them work by put up a piece of cardboard to block seeing of people
yes.
walking by, change a light to get rid of a reflection.
Yeah.
And they walk right up the chute.
Yeah, and in fact, when I have to take some of my lambs to market, I take them to a plant that follows your guidelines for how it should be designed. And so,
well, I hope it's working out.
Quite happy, it's working well. I thank you so much.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much for calling, Cindy. Appreciate your call. And let me invite you to call in too if you have a question or comment, experience to share with Temple Grandin. I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show and you can post your question or your comment there, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Has your work with animals also helped you learn to navigate human interactions in any way, Temple?
No, I'll probably navigate human interactions through other means. But let's say you have a kid that's kind of socially awkward. They got to learn social skills by just being taught. You got to teach them how to shake hands. I'm seeing too many kids today don't know how to shake hands. Well,
yeah.
The way I learned how to do that was when I was 8 years old. My mother had me be party hostess. I'd put on my best clothes and I'd greet all the guests when they came in for a party. And you've got to teach these social skills. It's sort of like teaching somebody in a foreign country. Some of the social circuits aren't hooked up. They've got to just learn it like you learn. Well, if you go to the Middle East, for example, you don't ever lift up and show the bottom of your foot because that's super rude in the Middle East. Well, I have to be told that. I have no way of knowing that.
Yeah.
Now just imagine teaching social skills. Everything they learn is like teaching somebody, you know, something for a foreign country.
Yeah, understood. Shane in Deerfield has a question for you. Shane, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello?
Hello, am I on?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello, yes. I had a question about autism in particular. My parents own and operate an adult family home. One of their residents has autism. Might be described as nonverbal.
He's nonverbal, okay.
She can be prompted to speak, but I guess the key is that she really has to be prodded and prompted.
Well, that's not normal speech. That would be partially verbal. When I'm talking about, you know, kids that are fully verbal, they talk normally. Now, they tend to talk too much and go on and on and on about their favorite things. You know, she sounds like, you know, more severe autism. And
she's not a child. Are you? I came in late on the program, and I apologize for that. Are you? Do you deal with adults with autism as well?
Well, yes, I am an adult with autism, but I'm on the, you know, the problem you've got with autism. It's a very big spectrum. I mean, Einstein had, you know, probably had autism. He didn't talk until age 3. But it's a very big spectrum with all different levels of abilities. And how's this person doing? Is she doing fine?
Well, the thing is that since she's moved in with us, she's been with us for about 2 years now, and her verbal abilities have increased certainly.
Good.
And I was just wondering if there's anything that can be done to encourage it further.
What you have to do with her is you have to stretch her. No surprises. Surprises will cause panic, but stretch her. Get her to try new things. Get her to do new things. Just make sure it's not a surprise. You have to stretch them just outside their comfort zone. And then also make sure she's not tired when you're doing this. You're going to do new things. Let's do it in the morning when she's not tired. But you're finding, you see, there's a tendency to just let them get in a routine and not do much. I talked to a mom the other day, a fully verbal teenager, older teenager that didn't seem to express any interest in learning how to drive. And I just said, well, and I'm not suggesting that she should be learning how to drive, she's only partially verbal, but I said, get them out in a big parking lot and you just got to start doing it.
Yeah, driving.
I rode a bike safely as a child. I mean, if a child rode a bike safely as a child, but there's a tendency to overprotect.
Oh.
There's a tendency to overprotect. You've got to stretch. Mother had a very good sense of just how much she could stretch me. And if you just let this girl sit around and watch TV a woman sit around and watch TV all day, she's not going to develop. And even if she's 40 years old, she can still develop.
Oh.
Don't underestimate her.
Absolutely. I would...
Challenges up, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Shane. And what do you in your teaching, Temple? It's interesting. You're a professor at Colorado State. What are your classes like?
Well, I teach a class in livestock handling, and the first lecture I show a lot of slides that show all the different distractions that make cattle balk. And then I talk about some basic cattle behavior principles, a flight zone, basic methods for moving animals. I discuss that. Then another class, I have them design a facility. And I actually have the students do a project where they have to make a drawing and design a cattle handling facility. And
very
I think
cool.
It's important for students to do things like this because I'm seeing, there's too much stuff where we're not doing any hands-on things anymore. And they have to figure out how to lay it out.
Yeah.
You see that it's not just a cookbook. They've got to figure it out.
That makes good sense. Dan in Onalaska, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello, Temple Grand. I've just heard you and very fascinated with your work, very much so. And I've been saying for a while now that based on Dan Wenter, a guy in Australia, he said that basically children who do not receive positive physical nurturing, the same petting and stroking our cats and dogs demand of us, when we are touch-deprived, which we all are, our frontal lobes will not develop properly. So I've been trying to tell institutions of every kind, schools, jails, everything, that they need to start practicing massage therapy, especially with the young, positive physical nurturing. And YMCA should be teaching massage therapy to these children who can't focus because they don't have the ability to use logic and reasoning.
Well, I think one of the things that we need to be doing, if you have, those orphans, in the Romanian orphanage, when one of the problems those kids had is that nobody was interacting with those kids. They were just leaving them in a crib all day, and they were getting, sensory deprivation. That was absolutely, totally horrible. It's extremely important for young children to get lots of interaction with adults, and that includes touching and all little kids especially. You don't just put them somewhere in isolation. That's completely terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Dan, for calling. Drew in Brooklyn, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, hello. I am a retired special ed teacher. Have worked with many autistic children, and Temple Grandin's insight in autism has been a godsend. And I also love animals, so thank you, Dr. Grandin.
Okay.
Well, I hope you hear that praise.
Thank you very, very much.
I hope you hear that praise a lot, Temple, because you've certainly earned it.
Yes.
Tell us what you're doing. Two speeches this weekend. And give us the...
Well, I'm going to be coming in doing an autism talk, when I come in, be doing that. And then I'm doing a whole bunch of talks for the Wisconsin veterinary students.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going on doing meeting with another autism group. So I'm always combining autism stuff with animal talks too.
That's great that you're able to do that.
Well, I think it's very important. I'm seeing too many young kids to get labeled autism, and this is on the real high end of the spectrum. Little smart geeky kids. And then I go out and I do a talk out at one of the tech companies, out in Silicon Valley, and I run into 25-year-olds that are programmers that I know are on the spectrum, but they never got diagnosed. And so they've got a great job with the great salary and lots of free food at a tech company. And then I'm seeing a little 10-year-old real smart little geeky kid's got an autism label because he has to have it in order to get any services because he's getting bullied in school. And all he can talk about all day is his autism. And I don't think that's a good thing. I'd rather have him talking about astronomy or about training dogs or, you know, some other thing. And you need to get these kids involved with shared interests. You know, the only place I was not bullied was when I was riding horses and then I was in the model rocket club and the electronics class. You know, get them involved in shared interests.
Yeah, I interviewed a woman who is a very successful classic pianist, and she just, you know, nobody was paid any attention to her, and finally she got to sit down at a piano once and just started practicing and working until her fingers bloodied, you know, every day. She just kept
at it.
Well,
you see, but that's, you see, now she's got a career as a classical pianist.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing today with too many of these little smart, what I'm going to just call the quirky kids that are kind of socially awkward, I'm seeing too many of these boys that ought to be brilliant in math getting addicted to video games, and they're going nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, if they were learning to program the games and go into the industry, then I'm fine with that. And I'm not, you know, anti-all technology. There's a lot of things you can do with technology that's really, really cool. But I want to see, I'm seeing guys that are 20 years old and they're on a Social Security check playing video games when they ought to be working in the maintenance shop, you know, at a factory or something like that. I go out to a meatpacking plant, and there's an old hippie at a meatpacking plant, and he runs the entire maintenance shop. And he came out of the trailer park, but he was saved by the welding class.
You know what, Temple? This has been so wonderful. I wish we had more time. I hope you have a wonderful visit to Wisconsin.
Okay.
In the meantime, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome. Great to talk to you.
Temple Grandin, please go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got links to her website and all of her books and her activities, the things that she's got going this weekend and on into the year. Garden Talk tomorrow. Lisa Johnson joins me. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store.